Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Ten minutes after nine on a Wednesday, hump day. Across the land, the 10th day of June 2020. Joining me from the East Coast is a friend of mine, Smitty. He will be known by Smitty. What's up? How are you today?
Hey, Mac. How are you doing from beautiful New Jersey?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. The Smitty is a retired police officer. So we served together at the basic school in 1989 before he got out. So we're going to talk about cop shit. But before that, as always, we got to figure out if we got to do the sniff test to see if Smitty passes. So first of all, let's talk about you. Born and raised where?
Born and raised in West Orange, New Jersey. Was a rebel without a clue in high school. Senior year, decided to enter the delayed entry program and went to Parris Island.
Wait, so hold on. How does the Marine Corps even? I mean, there's four different choices. There's more than that, right? I mean, you could do it in a number of other things. But if you're looking at the military, you know, there's four different choices. How does the Marine Corps and that whole fucking thing get on your radar?
I met with a recruiter, a guy named Sergeant McGurk. He just put it out there. He said, you know, we're the best, we're the few, the proud. And what they, you know, showed me and what they presented to me was showed me that, you know, that was the way to go. And that's the reason why I went that way. And, you know, I think it was the best choice of my life because I really didn't have much direction, you know, getting out of high school, like I said, and probably is the best choice I ever made in my life, you know.
Really? So that uninformed choice, buying that bit of advertising, was the best choice you ever made?
Yeah, definitely, because I was going down the wrong road, you know, grades weren't that great, and, you know, and playing sports and stuff like that, but, you know, college was probably in my, you know, in my, you know, next thing to do, so I said, hey, let me do this, let me sign up for 4 years, and I did that probably in November of my senior year in high school in 84, so.
Oh, so you got to go through the spring and be a badass, everybody knows you're going to be a Marine and all that?
Yes, I did, and then you know, went to graduated in June of 85 and went to Parris Island. Graduated in November 85, was 3rd Battalion, India Company. And then was a radio operator, went out to 29 Palms, radio school. And then I was sent out to the beautiful Okinawa for a year with Headquarters Battalion Camp Courtney, multi-channel platoon, where I went to bear hunt exercise in 86. And did a lot of training, learned a lot of good things. So worked with some great Marines over there. And then after that, I got sent back down to Quantico for back in 87. And I was sent out to the basic school. But then I was assigned summer of 87 to the Camp Upshur out in Quantico for the, I guess I was the PLC program to assist with communications with those guys who were going to become second lieutenants. I guess they go there, what, junior year of college or sophomore year of college or something like that.
But some shit like that, right? I wasn't one of those guys. Like, when I was in college, I was not thinking about joining the Marine Corps.
Oh, yeah?
No.
What the hell were you doing? You were going to become, a stock market guy, weren't you?
Yeah, I don't know. But, there's women in college. I was in San Diego, like, Marine Corps. Like, it wasn't even on my radar. I have to tell you that right now. Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, you dorks that are, like, thinking about joining the military. Like, I was like, whoa, what's that about? Guys got daddy issues, right? So yeah, that was not me. I was having a good time. I was not there yet.
Really? So we that a PLC program. That was good summer working with great Marines and you know, teaching you know, these guys, you know, deciding to go into the Marine Corps as full time as a second lieutenant after they graduated college. So
right. After
that, I got sent back to the basic school and I was working with communications platoon, working with the IOC guys and, you know, guys, you know, going out with training every week with you guys and, you know, tactics and TBS and, you know, IOC, which, you know, I can honestly tell you, Mike, worked with some great guys. And then I was lucky to be assigned to the tactics group with some great, great leaders of the Marine Corps. I mean, I can mention names. You know them all.
Go ahead. Start name dropping, Smitty.
I'll start name dropping. So listen to how great these 20 or 30 officers I worked with during the time in 88, 89 in the tactics group was Mike McNamara was another.
Boom.
Put him in the same category as General John Kelly. General Craparata, Clarity, General Osterman, all these guys are working in the same, IOC and tactics. And I was, I was lucky enough to be a part of that. And these guys showed me a lot. And I was, proud to serve with these guys because Colonel Adelhelm, Colonel Cole, a lot of guys. I mean, there was tons of guys that just showed me so much. John Carper, Captain Carper was another great individual. And one thing that stood about Mike and Carper were they always took their time out of the way and talked to, I was only a corporal at the time, and I was one of the few enlisted guys working at tactics at the time. And, we used to play pickup hockey. Remember that, Mac? We used to go and play pickup hockey, And that was a good time. So I did my time, got out in July of 89, August of 89, and then I went to college. I went to Harvard-on-Hudson, which is Jersey City State College in Jersey City, New Jersey. Got my bachelor's degree in criminal justice. And at that time,
Harvard on the Hudson?
Yeah, they call it Harvard on the Hudson. It's a state college right on Jersey City. If you're familiar with, you're probably familiar with New Jersey. It's Jersey City, New Jersey, right over the river from Manhattan. So
nice. Wait a minute. So yeah. how do you get pointed towards law enforcement coming out of the Marine Corps?
I always had respect for it growing up and stuff. Where I grew up was, the guys were in the police department. A lot of my friends' fathers are on the job in the fire department, police department. A lot of them were public servants. And I always looked at that job as you'll help bring back something to your community. And I always said, after I got in the Marine Corps, I said, hey, that would be a nice route to go because in New Jersey, they got a great program, a great pension program here. And things like that. So most important thing was going to college or getting that degree because that opened a lot more doors,
Got it. No, it wasn't that you couldn't get a girl, so you had to have a uniform. You had to have a uniform in your life.
It's somebody on the arm there, Matt.
So that wasn't, that's
fighting
not.
Fight them all.
All right. So you graduate.
Yep. Graduated in what happened was I put myself through the police academy at the time. There was a program that just started out in 93, the alternate route program, where basically you paid for your police academy time and then police departments could pick you up. And it was a brand new program that, police departments, it saves some money through not having to send guys through the 3 months of training. So I got picked up by a small department out in New Jersey and I did 26 years there. Most of the time I did probably about 9 years in a radio car in uniform. And then my last 17 years I did as a detective. And then I retired as a supervisor of the detective bureau. So did some times with the narcotics strike force and things like that. So yeah, it was a good career. It was New Jersey's got a proud police department community in New Jersey. And they really have a good reputation,
So talk to us. Let me ask you this. You watched the video of George Floyd being murdered. When you watch it, I had a conversation with my oldest daughter, Catherine, and she said, I see racism, just straight racism. And I said, there may be an element of that, but I just see hate. I mean, when you sit there and look at how calm he's sitting there and how he stays there and he never moves in spite of somebody filming him, in spite of other officers saying, hey, we need to roll him over, in spite of all, he just, with a calmness that is just fucking creepy, sits there. But you're a professional, Smitty. What do you see when you see that video?
Mike, I have to agree with you. I saw hate in his eyes. I didn't see racism because I think if that was anybody else, either a white or another minority, I think the same situation will happen. I was it was a boring situation. It was when I first saw it, I said, the first thing I said, I yelled at the TV and I said, get your, can I use the F word? Get your fucking, you know, knee off his neck. I mean, what training? No training has ever taught him that. I mean, that's the first thing. The training, the compassion, the common sense, the human dignity was just all thrown out the window. And like you said, the guy had like a hysteria that when he was looking at the camera, it just appeared to me that it was like void of any morals, you know?
Right.
You know, it's just so frustrating because it's taken us into a, you know, horrible, horrible thing that's been going on in America.
So let me ask you, so when you're yelling at the TV,
yeah,
you know the power that you're going to ultimately have to face this in your community. Yes or no? Is that what's going through your head?
About it. I mean, no doubt. You know, again, I'm retired, but I talked to a lot of guys, you know, who I work with. A lot of my friends are still on a job. A lot of my friends are leaders in their police department, bosses and stuff like that. And I just shook when I watched it. And I was just like, man, this is gonna tear everything we worked for all these years down, you know?
All right. So so when you, I want to take you chokeholds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're seeing, I think the Minneapolis Police Department announced that, you know, they have outlawed the chokehold for police officers. Talk to me about escalating force, Smitty. When you have somebody, and I think the stupid part about watching that is here, there's four officers. He's already cuffed. And they drag him out of the car, and he winds up outside with four officers. You can't get that dude back in that car.
And Mike, no doubt about it. You know, it's I want to go back to the common sense thing and the lack, just throwing training out the window. You know, I mean, guy's cuffed. All bets are off. That's it. It's over. You know.
Right. So let me ask you this: there's much has been made in the charging of all four officers. Two of the officers had, you know, were on their like third or fourth shifts. He's their training officer. Can you explain that relationship to us?
I think, Mac, I talked to you about it the other day about it. It's almost like similar to the Marine Corps. It's like, I hate to say it, he was their training officer. He's the one who was supposed to, you know, mentoring those guys and supposedly training those guys in their correct manner. And
so what does that include? Is that like after your shift, sitting down with them, them keeping notes, them asking you questions, you're that guy for them?
Yeah, you're critiquing everything he did that day. I mean, we don't know the exact facts, but, you know, nothing's come out. I mean, how long was he a training officer? Was he a training officer? These guys were only on their fourth shift, I believe. That's was in the press, right?
Right.
So these guys break down every day. They should. If they're doing a ride, if they're riding with the training officer, FTO, field training officer, these guys are talking about everything they do. Every time they make a car stop, every time they respond to a service call, they're talking about the positive things they're doing and the negative things they're doing. So it's almost like having an NCO talking to a PFC, Lance Corporal, or the same thing with an officer talking to a staff NCO about, hey, this is what you should have.
No, that's
right.
Probably a great way to look at it. He's their fire team leader, right? And they're brand new.
And he's his first line supervisor. And what I feel happened, and I can't talk for everyone there, but these guys only had 4 days on the job, and either they were intimidated and there's no excuse for their inactions, and they're going to have to pay the consequences for their inactions. I mean, an individual lost their life horribly and should have never lost their life. And what they did, you know, the rumors are they made some comments, and I don't know if you saw the one attorney for the guy saying
that,
hey, he did mention a couple times, hey, why don't we turn him over with this and that? And, the senior training officer said, no, and things like that. But again,
said something. The lawyer said, he says something like he's going through delirium or some shit like that, right? He says that. So are you expected as a police officer to then physically confront your training officer? Is that the threshold? Is that the standard these guys are going to be held to?
Mac, I was reading something today I guess 2016. I was reading something about Minneapolis. They have a duty to intervene. In 2016, they implemented, I don't know if it's a policy or a procedure, but they have a duty to intervene or attempt to intervene in if somebody's doing something what this field training officer was doing. So, I mean, again, it's that culture, you know, it's that culture of these young officers probably were either intimidated by not taking any action, or they just, you know, they were probably worried about being ostracized or, you know, labeled a rat. And I mean, or they just didn't have the heart to say, you know, get off them and things like that. So, I mean, you know, as well as the Marine Corps, Mike, you know, that's how it works, you know? And
But again, I mean, a lot of bad things happen, right? When younger guys are put in a situation where they're not sure what they're supposed to do because they're novices, and somebody older, you know, gets in their face and says, do you want to be one of us or do you not want to be one of us? It's like, well, yeah, I want to be one of us. Okay, then shut the fuck up.
No doubt about it.
But and there's plenty of rules, but still, when you're a novice, that's why, you know, what kind of riots are we going to have when those cops are not convicted of manslaughter?
Mac, I hate to say it. I agree with you 100%, and because their defense is going to be, well, I told my supervisor. But again, any prosecution might go after them and say, wait a second, you're at academy for a week. You knew what he was doing was wrong, and you didn't take action. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, but again, the jury has to be convinced, mm-hmm. right? Beyond a reasonable doubt. Right, that you knew that you know whatever the elements of the charges are, and for those two guys that are novices, that's a pretty high price to pay when you're just learning. Or maybe they're going to be or if they're convicted, they're going to be example to every other police officer, and in every police academy around this in the country, their pictures are going to go up with lesson, you know, about duty to intervene. Boom, those pictures go up, that video gets played. This is not enough. You have to physically grab him and throw him off that guy if you believe that suspect's life's in jeopardy. And so, and then you're going to deal with that, right?
No doubt about it, yeah. Hey, Mac, you know what? You look at the video and you just say, man, common sense, what are you doing, guy? You know, and again, you fall back to the, you know, he was my training officer. I told him to get off. He said, no, what else are we supposed to do? But again,
well, and let me tell you,
I got this kind of thing. Hey, I got this. We're good.
You know? No, let me tell you, I've heard that in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it never leads to good shit when somebody says, hey, I know the deal. We got this.
Yeah,
and so the interesting email question.
Mm-hmm.
Mac, I have a question for your guest. If that thing would have been done appropriately, how would it have been done? I've seen the whole video, and at one point he's handcuffed, which is what the two young officers do because they arrive first. He's seated next to a building, and then they walk across the street. You see them attempting to begin to put him in the car, and then the next shot I saw was he's now out of the car, on the ground, four officers around him in the video that shows the officer's knee on his neck. How should that have been handled? So they go there, and he there's not a whole lot he could do. He can kick, right? And he can collapse to the ground, but he's handcuffed, so he really can't do a whole lot other than that. Okay? So let's say a suspect does that. What do you do? Do you zip tie his feet and throw him back at the vehicle?
Mac, you got to be careful with that too. I mean, even in my county police department, guys have done that. And when, you know, they're laid out in the back of the patrol car, these guys start struggling back and forth. I don't know the exact word for it. And then these guys stop breathing too with those hog tie things, you know. But it's just, where was the sergeant too? That's another thing. I mean, you know, I haven't read any of the police reports or anything like that. This went on for a while, I imagine. I didn't see the time frame about what happened and things like
that. Well, it's not that long though, Smitty. 8 minutes. So where's the sergeant? Is that guy driving around? Is he at the precinct? Like, explain, what's the responsibility of the sergeant?
I mean, a situation like that, you'd hope that, if they knew what was going on, supposedly it was felony arrest for passing counterfeit money or things like that. So, Maybe again, Mac, he'd say that was Memorial Day weekend that happened, right?
Yes.
Maybe it was skeleton crew squad and things like that.
And that's why those two young guys were working. Let me ask you, do you think that when people heard about this and they saw that, you know, Chauvin has 19 different complaints against him, right, over the course of 19 years or 18 complaints in 19 years, do you think that surprised anybody on that police force that he was involved in that?
Probably not. No. He's got 19 years on the job, and he had how many complaints, you said?
I think I saw like he has something like 18 different complaints filed against him of all kinds.
We don't know what the outcome of those complaints were, substantiated and things like that. So it's hard to, like, when people say, oh my God, 19 complaints, were they demeanor complaints, you know, things like that. So that, it's just something that I don't look at, because as a police officer, somebody can come in and make a demeanor complaint against you or an IA complaint against you, and it could be unfounded. But it's still
explain what a demeanor complaint and an IA complaint is.
You know, somebody comes in and reports to Internal Affairs or reports to your supervisors that maybe used language that was not professional or things like that, or something that was such minor, but as a person that you're dealing with didn't think it was minor and would come in and make a complaint, a demeanor complaint against you. Somebody, you know, you maybe used the F word on somebody, or you just, you know, raised your voice to somebody who didn't appreciate that, and they came in and made a complaint. A lot of those times, you know, they might be written up as just a simple demeanor complaint and won't to the level of, you know, an internal affairs complaint, you know, things like that. So
demeanor is, I don't like your attitude, I don't like your demeanor towards me.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Yep. All right. So the fact that he may have 18, it may be he got unlucky or crossed paths with somebody. 18, and again, is that a big number for guys that have been on the force that long? I guess somebody else would have to tell us that. Makes sense, that number.
Different states categorize in different ways through their attorney general's office and through their prosecutor's office, where, you know, demeanor complaints might not fall under the guidelines of a internal affairs complaint. That would be, you know, there's different levels of where it would go and things like that. So we really have not seen, Chauvin's, personnel complaints, you know, I mean, right. You know what I'm saying?
So somebody, your point is somebody's going to have to provide the context for us relative to that. Is 18 a big number or not? And somebody else is going to have to give us broader context to figure that out. Okay.
And you know what else, Mike, we haven't seen yet is the body cam from all the guys. Everybody's wearing a body cam, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's gonna help, you know, help the situation with regards to looking at the totality of what happened, what was exactly said between, you know, Mr. Floyd and the officers. You know, did these young officers actually said to Chauvin, hey, he said he's not breathing, or whatever, what defense attorney said regarding, hey, can we roll him on his side? No, kind of thing, you know.
So, talk to me about. So how should that have been handled, though? You get to the car, he doesn't want to get in, he collapses, there's four of you there, you know, instead of kneeling on his neck, how should it be done?
I would have first rolled him up, sat him up next to the car and said, hey, man, stop doing what you're doing. You're going to get additional charges for what you're doing right now. Try to de-escalate the situation as much as you can. That's what, you know, what we get trained to do in yearly training, is the de-escalation. You know, right. The lack of training in this situation was thrown out the window, you know, and I mean, they didn't de-escalate the situation. It appears to me, watching the video, remember, I don't have the totality about the reports and stuff. It just seems like they didn't de-escalate the situation. They escalated the situation with, you know, this guy kneeling on his neck and for, you know, whatever, 8 minutes and things like that.
By accounts, they knew each other. Which
that's what's coming out now. And, you know, that's another whole situation that is really concerning to me. If, you know, they knew each other and then maybe they didn't like each other, but there's no reason for doing what that guy did. He just gave a black face to every law enforcement officer in the world. And what happened to Mr. Floyd should have never happened. I mean, that was an abhorrent situation that it's going to live on the history of, the world.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And hopefully it brings change. You know, what the police departments need is, I think we talked about it, better background.
Well, I so let's talk about that. So, So you de-escalate the, you would have de-escalated the situation. What happened? So, I mean, he's on fentanyl and meth. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's not like he's like in his right mind, right? And so it's, I mean, and you know that, right? I mean, you're looking at him going, this guy's fucking, he's not there. Mm-hmm. Right? And so then what? So, but, so, I mean, there's four of us there. So you tell me, yeah, we're not going to zip tie his feet. Because to me, you zip tie his feet, right? You zip tie his, he's already handcuffed. His hands are behind his back. We pick him up. We place him in the car and we head downtown.
Exactly. I mean, you know, he did try to de-escalate the situation as much as he can. And you get him in a bus, you get him down to headquarters, you know, and you process him, you know. Remember, once the handcuffs are on him back, he's under your, you know, and anything that happens to him, it's going to come back to you. So these guys, you know, they're going to be held accountable for the actions they took, you know.
Hey, what does it tell you? Here's another thing that I found amazing is that, you know, he continues in spite of somebody standing there with a video camera videotaping him. I mean,
that's why what I said about the morals and human dignity. I mean, it was almost like he was void of that, staring at the camera like that. It's just wow, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, okay. I don't know the guy. I never met the guy, but I don't know. 19 years on the job in Minneapolis. You know, I don't know. Maybe he's a, you know, he's a veteran officer and been through a lot. I heard he was involved in a couple shootings and things like that. So, you know, I heard you guys talking the other day, you and your guest, about, you know, how the Marine Corps takes guys off front lines and things like that. And, you know, maybe this guy might have been have, you know, maybe supervisors should have saw something that, you know.
Well, let me ask you about that, Smitty. If you work in a major urban area, if you live in a major urban area, how long can you do that job before you're, I mean, you said you did it for what, 8 years?
Yeah, I did 9 years in a radio car.
Okay, you know? So you're essentially in a major urban area. How long can you do that? You know, you can't send a lance corporal to fight in a war for 9 straight years.
Not at all.
But that's what we do with our cops. And then it's like, oh, this guy's lost his fucking mind. I mean, life expectancy, 10-year less than the regular population. Divorce rate, 70 to 80% in major cities. Alcohol rate and suicide rate, higher than national averages. I mean, to me, you know, if we're looking at that guy and we're saying, hey, that guy was dead inside. How do we keep that from happening? So, and again, let me just say, now we're talking about problem solving. This problem is a pretty, and I want to ask you about that. The data I've seen says that these numbers have come down every year since 2015, since they started tracking them. And they've come down by about 56% relative to, you know, quote unquote, unarmed black, you know, males being shot by police officers. And then the percentage overall, it used to be 40% were black. Now 22% are black. And so the percentage has come down. You hear those numbers. What are your thoughts?
I mean, the numbers, you know, like you said, you have to dig deep. You found them. But, you know, that's not the narrative that's going out to, you know, the media right now. It's strikingly, I mean, I saw in my, you know, in my own eyes that I, you know, with the de-escalation, community policing things, but I just don't think people want to hear the numbers, Mac, you know, I mean, like you said, you come out and say those and it's almost, you know, your numbers are wrong kind of thing. You bring the facts out and people don't want to hear your side of the facts, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so do those facts surprise you? Is it pretty commonly known in law enforcement the level of restraint that police show? Because to me, when you read the studies that go into police, you know, having to use deadly force, right, and to defend themselves, right, even the vast majority of, and I've looked at every case in 2018 and 2019. What happens is there's a stop, and then the situation is escalated by the person that stopped, not by the police. The police don't get out with their guns drawn and start fucking with somebody and then they shoot them. That has not been the narrative in any one of these. In every single one of these, you know, I would say 90% of these, it is escalated by the perpetrator to include using vehicles to attempt to run over police. You know, a fist fight breaks out and then the suspect gets the upper hand, grabs the police officer's taser or flashlight and starts beating him with it. And then, you know, the police officer, you know, begins the application of deadly force.
You know what it is, Mac, you know, the misconception, it appears to me, is like everybody thinks police officers go out and they want to use deadly force. No one gets the uniform on every day and says, hey, I want to go out and kill somebody. I mean, that's just like that statement alone is just preposterous. It's idiotic to say something like that. You know, cops are out to do a good job. And like you said, most of the times that it's the defendant that, you know, brings the escalation up where deadly force has to be used or justified.
Well, the statistic, right, that you see that I saw, right, in this, right, a solid body of evidence finds no structural bias in the criminal justice system with regards to arrest, prosecution, and sentencing. Crime and suspect behavior, not race, determine most police actions, which is what I found in all the things I've looked at. In 2019, police officers fatally shot 1,004 people. African Americans are about a quarter of those killed by cops, 235. In 2018, the last year for which data has been published, African Americans made up 53% of known homicide offenders in the United States and commit 60% of the armed robberies, although they're 13% of the population. So if that is what police are coming in contact with in terms of crime and suspect behavior, I mean, honestly, the numbers should be more than they are if that's the case.
Exactly. And you know what? I'd love to see the numbers, and they don't keep a track of this, where officers were authorized to use escalating or deadly force and didn't use it, and they were hurt by the defendant. Yeah, I would love to see those, but no, probably keeps files of that kind.
Yeah,
of,
there's probably that's not being kept. But that's the whole story.
Narrative, yeah.
I mean, and so this morning, I before I went on the air, I was watching the hearing that was getting going, and the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, I think that's who it is, Jerry Nadler, he gave half the statistic. He did not give, you know, the amount of violent crime that's perpetuated, that's committed, you know, by black males, and that's what the police deal with. The only part of the story that he said is blacks are twice as likely, right, to be shot, you know, by as they are a percentage of the population.
But Mac, why is the other side of the aisle saying, wait, there's something else you have to add here? You have to add numbers that we have, and why isn't the other side doing that? Why are they? What are they?
Well, I didn't watch. I didn't watch the whole hearing, so I don't know that nobody did that. But so as a police officer, when you know the truth and you know these numbers, it must be beyond frustrating to see the debate cherry picked for political reasons and people not looking to get to the truth. And because it's only through getting to the truth are you going to be able to make this better.
Mac, I don't know if you saw the PBA president for NYPD. I think it was on this morning or yesterday on Fox, yelling, hey, you know, to the media and saying, hey, you know, you're just tearing down every police officer with a painted brush, saying we're all racist. We all go out and try to kill minority people. And it just doesn't fit the narrative that's going on in the country. I think we really have to get both sides together and sit down and have each person's in their corner right now. You know, each group's in their corner, and we have to get together. We have to solve this.
Well, I think, you know, and I have to say this, that you have to give Black Lives Matter, the movement, credit, because what they've done is they've leveraged, you know, on an annual basis, a handful of incidents. They've used social media and powerful audio and video to convince the nation, right, that there are hundreds of people every year, innocent, unarmed people being shot by cops, when the truth is not even close to that. And I've said numerous times on the program, but I asked my 16-year-old daughter, how many, you know, black guys do you think are shot that are unarmed a year? She said 200. And I mean, you know, Colleen is a product of her generation, right? Most of the news she sees on social media, and that's how she consumes. And Black Lives Matter, that movement, right, has leveraged that to convince the nation of, I believe, if you stood on the corner and you took a poll and you asked that question, you would get more answers like Colleen's than you would anything else. My 26-year-old daughter said 50.
Yeah, Mac, you said it took you what? Short time to find those numbers in the Washington Post. Didn't you say it's right there in black and white, the numbers that you presented, right?
Well, I had seen it before as after, I want to say, if I remember it, the Marjorie Douglas school shooting.
Yeah.
And I'd seen, you know, and there was an article about, you know, who guns kill in America. And then I saw that database, you know, in that debate. So I remembered it and I went back to it and I that's what I did by myself. And then subsequently it's come out in different, but very slowly. But I think unless people that on that side of the argument yell just as loud as the Black Lives Matter group is yelling, right, to make people pay attention to the truth so that we can have a discussion about the truth and not just have somebody ram their version of reality down your throat and it's not real, then you're not going to deal with the issue.
But why do you think that's not happening though, Mac?
Because they don't need to talk about the truth because everybody's buying their narrative. If they're buying what I'm selling, I don't care what you say. I know I'm going to steamroll these people because if they push back on me, I do what we did to the publisher of the New York Times, that Sulzberger dude.
Push him out, yeah.
Right? We crawl so far up his ass, right, that we make him be our dancing chicken to the point where he'll exclude the op-ed of a United States senator that simply disagrees with the popular narrative of our paper. But that's what the opinion space is for. And we'll make him fire the guy who published it, and we'll teach him a lesson. I mean, that's some scary shit, which means the truth doesn't matter. Respect and diversity don't matter. It's who can scream the loudest. So if you could scream the loudest and you're winning, why would I worry about the truth?
Yeah, and Mac, I could say in my lifetime, the media is just, man, I think the media is just, it's really just dividing our country more than ever now. I think in my lifetime, I think I've never seen our country more divided than it is now. And everybody says 1968, you're a year older than me. 1968, they always say because, you know, the country was divided because of the civil rights and the Vietnam War and things like that. And I said, we don't have we have a war going on. We still got troops over in Afghanistan, Iraq. But, I mean, man, holy shit. What is going on with our country?
I don't believe our country is more divided than ever. Honestly,
so.
No. Because what have you seen in the wake of all this shit? You've seen people go out and scrub graffiti. You've seen people donate to GoFundMe causes to rebuild, you know, bars and stuff that, you know, the guy who wanted to open his sports bar and shit like that. You've seen, right, you've seen Americans get out and help each other. Right,
maybe,
and that's
you're right. Maybe
to me,
there, out a false narrative about being
there is a there's a small group of people who want to get the blowtorch out, right? And but that's not the country that I live in. That is the freak show that gets put on the news on a nightly basis. But what you see, by and large, is what we all experience. You know, this is a great country, and when shit gets difficult, what happens? People deliver meals. Right, people donate to help people restore businesses. Right, people give a shit, and so, but the media makes money off of their narrative, and that's why they cherry pick the truth. That's why they protect their own line of business. And to me, it's pathetic. It's pathetic.
Mac, it's unbelievable. I mean, the media, like you said, did you see, I think NBC or MSNBC hire Lisa Page, you know, former FBI lady?
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing to me. Amazing. It's almost like they're smiling and slapping President Trump right across the face, you know?
Well, but again, and, you know, to me, I get that if that's your editorial position, but to hire Lisa Page to be it, who might be indicted on a charge of conspiracy against the United States government as a legal analyst, does that pass the smell test in your business?
No way, absolutely not.
Right. All right. Let me ask you about reforms.
Sure.
Okay. When you look at these issues, right, now the data tells you that Officer Chauvin is a statistical anomaly, right? Okay. So when your ideas about police union reform, do they have too much say? Do they allow the police force do they force the police force to keep guys like, you know, Chauvin, and does the union protect those guys? And then what other reforms would you say need to be enacted for the police? Because again, the data shows this stuff coming down every year coming down.
Regarding the union, I mean, here in New Jersey, I can't speak for the rest of the world. We have a really strong union in New Jersey, and in my time on the job, I only had a couple officers that were fired because of criminal activity, you know. And honestly, the guys that I knew that were fired, that they didn't have any, you know, like the 18 or 19 complaints against them. They did one or two really effed up things, and you know, basically were you know, criminally charged and had to, you know, get fired for the job, you know. But there's a lot of things, but both, you know, we have to sit down at the table. I think the most important thing is regarding training. I mean, the training for this incident was thrown out the window, and more hands-on training, things like that, tactics, you know.
Yeah, but let me just tell you, Smitty, and this goes back to the mental health piece. Again, if we're going to address the small number of incidents in the country that happened like this, okay? And again, if you don't believe they're small, just start doing the research, okay? It's not like – is his name Derek Chauvin? Is that his name? I don't know. It's not like that Chauvin dude. It's not like he didn't know the right thing to do. So what is training going to do for that guy?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, you
know, so that goes back to my question. How long can you do that job before you're so far out of your mind? So to me, if you tell me at about 8 years, you've probably seen too much, and it's really difficult to not react, you know, because as you watch more and more of that, you have this anger that builds up in you. I know that's what happened to Marines in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then it's like they're not humans anymore. They're just pieces of shit, right? And that's a dangerous place to be. So at the 8 year mark, do we say, okay, look, you either got to get promoted to be a detective, to be a sergeant, to be a lieutenant or something. You got to be in the leadership pipeline or you're going to go do something else, but you cannot stay as a beat patrolman, a beat patrol woman, for more than 8 years. And at 8 years, we've got a GI Bill. You can go to college for free for 4 years. We've got a living stipend for you, and you're off to a different career. Do we need to do something like that? Because at 19 years, you're so fucked in the head, you're either going to, again, life expectancy 10 years shorter than the rest of us, divorce rate higher than the rest of us, alcohol rate and suicide rate higher than the rest of us.
Mike, Mac, I mean, you bring up a lot of good points, but bottom line, with regards to that kind of thing, it's probably going to be financially, too. I mean, you know, you're saying about sending guys out, you know, after a certain period of time, maybe paying for college or anything, things like that. But again, you're talking about financial things, but I understand where you're coming from. And that's something that police leadership and police supervisors have to sit down and at the table. But again, this guy had 19 years on the job. Where was that supervision for the last 19 years where they said, hey, what was going on with this guy? Maybe we could put this guy inside, you know what I'm saying, off the street. But that didn't happen, you know?
Right. Do you think that that's too long to stay on the streets? Can guys do that? Can you stay on the street? And again, I don't mean being Andy of Mayberry, right, and helping people get their cats out of trees and shit like that. I mean, if you're in, you know, if you're in a city, can you do that job for that long without being fucked in the head?
No, that's you're seeing a lot of shit for 19 years on the job. And Minneapolis is that's a busy city. He's seen a lot of shit. No excuses. And no, he probably should have been, you know, put inside. I mean, he was a training officer, so you know, training officers are usually they're assigned because they're doing a halfway decent job. You know, I mean, they're training the new officers of the police department.
Okay, let me ask you this: at what year mark do you stop? If you're good, do you get promoted to being, you know, a sergeant, right? Or you get in the pipeline to be a lieutenant, or you go become a detective, or you go become a training officer? You know, what? How many years is that? Or does it?
Most departments, you know, in New Jersey, a lot of departments were civil service tests where you have to take a written test and then move your way up. A sergeant probably, you know, 7, 8 years, 9 years. And then, you know, lieutenant probably between, you know, 12 and 17, 18 years. And then, you know, up and up. But, there must be some reason why he's still a patrolman. But a lot of guys, I got to honestly tell you, Mac, a lot of guys 19 years on a job are patrolmen, field training officers. They may be working a day shift, so they don't want to be switched to a supervisor position because in a bigger city department, they may go to midnight shift or might go on a shift that's, you know, better, you know, not good for them mentally or physically and stuff like that. Overtime is in effect where, okay, this guy's working a afternoon shift. You know, senior guy, he says, hey, I don't want to go down to days. I want to stay on afternoons because the monetary gain from overtime and things like that. That's a whole thing. Whole different situation we could talk about, but bottom line is, you know, 8 years, 9 years, you should be a supervisor in the police department if you scored high in the civil service.
So if we walk the dog on that, you're not a supervisor, okay? And you're staying in as a patrolman, mm-hmm. So you're a senior lance corporal, and you can't make corporal, and you're going to stay in that capacity for 9 years, and you're not going to be fucked up out of your mind.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you could be fucked up out of your mind, but again, it's a situation, and each individual, you know, decides on that if they want to study to be promoted.
Right, but my point to you is that maybe it shouldn't be the individuals. It shouldn't be left to the individuals because that's how you get to 10 years shorter life expectancy, divorced, alcoholic, and suicidal.
Yeah, again, Mac, we don't know what was going through this guy's. You know, life, you know, I mean, I read
no, but the picture that you paint, if he's not a sergeant, right, in 19 years, then you're looking at he's a terminal lance corporal.
Mm-hmm.
OK, and so he's on your streets every day living that life. And then you look at the empty look at his head. And so when you look at this shit, Smitty, if you were queen or king for a day, and you could make changes in policing to deal with this issue. And again, statistically, less than 10 in 2019. Statistically, less than 17 in 2018. That's what we're talking about. So if we're interested in making this number go to zero, that the horrific video that the nation has seen, that we want to completely eradicate that. What would you do?
One thing, Matt, you know, it starts at the top leadership, you know, from all the way down from the, you know, the supervisors, the chiefs, all the way down captains, lieutenants, down to the, you know, first line supervisors. In a lot of departments are us against them attitude, you know, and that has to go away.
What does that mean, though? What does that mean that we're out here killing ourselves, making this work every day, and the only thing they're interested in is burning us if we get in trouble?
And the situation with the last couple of weeks, I mean, that's gonna inflame the situation even more now. You know, I mean, that department culture about us against them just has to cease. You know, and that's leadership. That's well, leadership stops that from happening. You know, it's one of the things. Again, I talk about tactics and training. That's all part of the game too. But you know, it is. I again,
but you don't think the union thinks a major issue.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, again, the union is there to help their officers in the departments and stuff. That's their job. Yeah, they definitely want to seat at the table. There's no doubt about it. But right now there's no one sitting at the table, Mac. Like you said, everybody's just screaming in their corner. No one wants to sit down.
But,
like you said,
no one
wants to hear the numbers. No one wants to, because it doesn't fit their narrative. And that's what's going on, you know.
Okay.
And police feel like they're being painted in one brush, you know.
So, but eventually we're going to get to that. I mean, right now, right, that venting has to take place, right? I mean, really, so in the country, you saw the third memorial service. I guess yesterday was a funeral for Mr. Floyd. But it was the third one of those in a week, and the nation's watched, you know, it's been on national TV every fucking time, right? So the steam and the hatred and the passion that goes with that is now being emptied. But that's going to spend itself, and then we're going to be left with the issues.
Mac, right. I'll tell you right now, New Jersey, you know, we got Governor Murphy here.
Right.
We were shut down. Right. Over here, we had a lot of number of people passing away from the pandemic, from the virus. And, he really shut us down. We're starting to slowly open it back up. But he was out protesting last week, walking around with everybody. And a couple police officers like, wait a second, this guy should be charged, because basically what they were doing was they were charging people for violating these, legislations that Murphy passed. So he goes out and violates his own orders. And people are just really frustrated by that, seeing that, you know, a lot of people in our area, I don't know if out in California, people couldn't even go to funerals back. You know, my mom passed away during it. She didn't die from the virus, but you know, they weren't even allowed anybody to go to the funeral homes. There was like two people allowed to be in the funerals. And then they see, you know, with what was going on with, the Floyd funeral, and having, I mean, he had every right to have that. But the people in New Jersey and the tri-state area, they couldn't even go see their loved ones when they passed away from the virus. I don't think it helped the situation at all. And then again, when Governor Murphy goes out and walks around protesting with the people, but saying, hey, you're not allowed to do that, it doesn't help the situation at all, you know?
No, I'm with you. But eventually all that's going to get blown out of the room, and we're going to get left with the issue itself. And so
we'll
like
see, Matt.
What's that?
I said we'll see. I hope it does. I hope we finally come to agreement where we can sit down at the table and hear each other's, you know, things to how to make this make the police departments better, make the country better, you know, because right now, like you said, everybody's just flame throwing at each other right now, you know.
You don't sound very optimistic.
Hey, you know, it's being in the police department for 26 years and, you know, in the Marine Corps for four, it's just you try to be optimistic, but sometimes you've got to be pessimistic too. It's just like, you know, Mac, you've seen it. You were LA riots. Where were you in the LA riots? You were stationed out in what, California at that time, right? In 92? Or were you out there then?
Yeah. I mean, we were getting ready to go after the second Rodney King trial, but we never went.
Yeah, so you saw it firsthand out there. You knew what was going on, and it's going on for a long, long time. And you know, the politicians like to talk, but there's no answers to anything. That's why it frustrates me when I see Vice President Biden talk, and I'm like, wait a second, you've been part of the situation for 50 years. What have you done to make our country better? You know, hate to talk politics, but it's
I mean, it's the truth, and he's trying. I mean. He's trying to, leverage this into obviously votes and things like that. But I mean, I think people rightly look at him and say, dude, you're not the solution to this. You know, I mean, look at your voting record, and you've been historically part of the problem on occasion. I talked earlier today about, I mean, leadership in this country sucks. And to me, look, you know, when you look at this problem, statistically, it's a small problem, right? The video is horrible, right? And you have much of the nation that believes, like my younger daughter did, right, that hundreds of unarmed black men are being shot by the police. Okay. So So that's the narrative, that Black Lives Matter, that movement has been successful in convincing the nation. Hopefully at some point we have public hearings where that data is put in front of everybody and say, okay. And then we can say, okay, ask this question. If Black Lives Matter, and we all believe they do, right, how do we get at the 7,400 Black Americans that were murdered last year? How do we get at the pregnancy rate among young Black women in this country? Because those are the things that keep people impoverished and keep and get people dead. And they're much more substantial problems than this problem that we're talking about, as horrible as it is. How do we have and without leadership, you can't get to that discussion.
Mac, look what happened in Chicago this past week. What, 18 people died in a 24-hour, was murdered in 24-hour period. You don't hear that on the national media at all. It's just like, it's just amazing to me. I mean, minority, they're killing each other and no one wants to talk about it, you know? I feel for the people living in those communities, you know? I mean, man, and you know, and now they're talking about defunding and, you know, moving money out of the police departments. Just come on, you know.
Let me just read you the data from Chicago over Memorial Day weekend. 10 African Americans were killed in drive-by shootings. All right, 80 people were shot total in drive-by shooting. If you looked at the whole 3-day weekend, 21 were shot fatally. Right, and that problem is a black-on-black problem. In the majority of those killings. And so, and again, that's over 7,000 people. And so to me, that's the discussion that you want to have in the nation. How do you get there without leadership? And if all's we're going to do is have a conversation to in order to score political points to win an election, you know, then this problem's not going to go. This problem's not going to get better. This problem's not going to get better. And so it's just painful.
And you know better, the people in Chicago, they want police departments on every corner of their street. Those people in those tough communities and, you know, in those minority communities, they want the police there to help them, you know? I mean,
let me tell you, if you ask them about defunding the police and all that, they'll laugh in your face.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it sounds like it's Iraq. 18 people, are you kidding me, on a one-day, 24-hour period? Come on. I mean...
80 people were shot over the weekend, 21 fatally.
It's amazing. Well, yeah. Mac, you talk about leadership. You know, we talk about President Trump, too. It's just like, where's his empathy for this all going on right now? You know?
No, he's fucking tone deaf, man. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, you know, standing in front of the church with that Bible. I mean,
yeah, upside down, too. The Bible is upside down.
Class, what the fuck? It's not like he's a church-going guy.
And the next day, you went to the Catholic memorial for the Pope. And what was that all about? When's the last time he actually walked into a church on a Sunday? Come on, you know.
No. Again, but that's is Joe Biden better?
No, I'm not saying that. But
no, is Hillary Clinton better?
No, not at all.
But no, I mean, so to me, the deal you make with the devil is, yeah, Trump's an asshole. Biden's an asshole. Hillary Clinton's an asshole. Trump's not a Washington insider, and he'll probably be better at the economy. And so I'll vote for him. And I'm a conservative. I can't vote for the other two. That's what you're left with in this shit show of ballots.
Mac, it's just crazy. Like he puts his 2 cents in tweets about things that you're the president of the United States. Let your subordinates get involved in that. The thing about the Buffalo thing with the old man getting pushed down, and why does the president of the United States get involved in something like that? He said he read something. I mean, are you kidding me? You know?
Yeah. But again, the thing that he and his defenders will say is that's how he got elected.
I know. You're right. You're exactly right. Yep. It's scary. It's scary times. So, like you said. It's like
no, the but and the thing though, my point is this, to link this back to leadership, yep. Right? You know, this issue that we're dealing with relative to police violence has to be put in the appropriate context, right? Which means you got to confront the truth about it, so that you can continue to force those numbers down, which hopefully will continue. And then what you need to say is, okay, We all believe Black Lives Matter. What's the next step in making, you know, making that progress that we don't seem to be able to make in major urban areas in this country, where we continue to have too much black-on-black violence, right? We're over 7,400 murders in 2018. Come on, right? How do we make that better? And it's the long-term solutions are what? Education, you know, being able to find a job, right? Birth control and sexual education for young women so that they don't have a lot of choices in their lives taken away from them because they're too immature, you know, when they make lifelong decisions. And so how do you get to that discussion? And I get discouraged because I don't know that we have the leaders there that could think of it. And that's why, you know, when I was working around on my projects yesterday, you know, when I thought of Martin Luther King's words, you know, I hope one day that, you know, I have a dream that my children will be judged on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. What if he were standing around watching all this, what would he say to everybody?
He'd be like, what the hell is going on? He'd be saying, hey, you know, join together. We're all, you know, we're all one person here. You know, we all have to work together to find this common solution about everything, you know. But yeah. It doesn't, like you said, Mac, it doesn't appear to me that they don't want to find a common solution, you know.
No, I think what's happening here is people have found a tool, and that's social media and the internet, to leverage their agenda into action. But the problem's going to be it's not going to be enacted, right? No. It's not going to get through Congress like that. And so while you may be successful on social media convincing people to get their news from social media that this is the issue, ultimately it's got to go to a place where they will do the research, where they will get informed. And although you may get it through the House of Representatives, you won't get it through the Senate anytime soon because it's controlled by Republicans, which will look at the police side of it. And even if Democrats take over marginally the Senate in the next election, they won't have 60 votes, so that it's still not going anywhere. And so people are going to get frustrated. So to me, that's why it needs to be bipartisan. It needs to be about the truth, and it needs to be about longer term solutions. And again, if you can listen to Martin Luther King's speeches and you don't look inward to say, how do I treat other people better? How do I act like more of a Christian if I'm a Christian, or whatever your religious beliefs are? How do I contribute to make this better in the spirit of what Dr. King was talking about? Then to me, you're just interested in your own agenda, and this is not going to get better. I've got one more email, and I'll let you go, Smitty.
Okay.
Mac, I'm curious. Your guest doesn't see police unions as a big impediment to all this. In the process of an internal affairs complaint, what is the police union role? Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, I mean, the police union role is, you know, remember, you know, officers have their rights too when involved in, you know, when they're involved in, especially involved in criminal investigation where they're accused of a crime, you know, things like that. They have the right, you know, just like any other person in this country. And the unions, you know, they step in, they're doing their job. I got to say, I was a union delegate for 6 years. So, you know, I was part of that side of that, you know, side of the, you know, police department, and you know, they have a job to do, and you know, they protect the rights of the officers that who were involved in any kind of disciplinary action. I know they have a job to do, and there may be some things that might have to be you know, everybody talks about the regarding lawsuits, like officers are getting sued, and they should officers should have to take out their own like liability insurance. I don't know if you heard that going around, things like that. That kind of frustrates me, Mike. I mean, you know, that kind of what's going to happen, Mac, with you know, talking on unions, but also talking what's going to happen. They're going to push police people who want to get into police not to get into police anymore if they're going to push it towards that way, where, you know, the liability is going to be taken off and put on.
How can you have a police force if, you know, how do you afford your own liability coverage? And no. And if they do, then you got to give everybody a raise, mm-hmm, to afford it.
You know, it's sometimes frustrating me. Hey, the unions are covering, you know, it's funny when people talk about the police unions, they overstepped their boundaries. But then when it comes to unions and other positions in different jobs and stuff, unions are the best. But when it comes to police unions, they overstep their power and things like that. They have a job to do, Max.
Explain to me. So when we look at this and we have a hearing, right? What's the composition of a board that adjudicates that ultimately? So, you know, Officer Chauvin's charged with some kind of complaint. We have internal affairs investigated. They present their evidence at a hearing, and there's three of us sitting there that are going to hear the hearing. Explain how that works. And then ultimately, Smitty, you know, I don't know if a police chief can do this and has the time to do it, but I think maybe they ought to. Is that, to me, the police chief ought to be the deciding, you know, vote in that. That the police chief ought to have the ability, right? So if there's a union rep and then a community rep, right? And then the chief of police. If there's a swing vote in all that, to me, it ought to be the chief of police. Because they ultimately are then responsible for keeping that person or not keeping that person on the force. So explain to us, is that normally how a board is composed? It might be one, it might be three, it might be five, but they're...
Exactly right. And ultimately, each side presents their side. And ultimately, like I say, I agree with that. You know, the chief should have the ultimate, decision-making process, because ultimately he's the one who's going to have to keep this guy or let this guy go and say, hey, you know, recommendations come up, you know, through the chain of command up through, and then the chief makes the ultimate decision. What's going to happen to this individual, you know?
Yeah. So in McNamara world, it would be a 3-person board. Somebody, the union can appoint somebody, you know, our community organization appoint somebody, and then the chief of police. So in case of a tie, the chief would be the swing vote in all of it. And that way, you know, he or her would have ultimate responsibility for that person on their force, and as well it should be. And if that person fucks up, then you can fire that person, and you can fire the chief of police too, because it says their judgment isn't what it should be.
Exactly right. Mac, one thing I got to say is, you know, what it is, bottom line is good police officers have to call out bad cops. That's what we have to be able to say, hey, you know what?
Are they willing to do that?
You know what? You have to change that culture then, Mac. I mean, you know, I'm out of the job now, but it's, you know, I got on the job in 93 and, you know, I had a lot of respect for my senior officers. Some of them were Vietnam vets, you know, some of them saw combat in Vietnam, and I had utmost respect for them. But they're the ones who told me, if you ever see anything, you know, that's not right, you have to say something. And I took that a lot, because, you know, coming from the Marine Corps, and these guys were, combat veterans and stuff like that. And I learned that. I said, you know, hey, if you see somebody doing something wrong, you have to say something, you know?
I think that's hard in cultures like ours.
No doubt.
I know it's hard in the Marine Corps. I know that whenever we looked into violations of the law of armed conflict, when Marines did bad things, normally it wasn't the first time they had done something wrong. And for those that did, and there was confrontations that took place within the squad, guys who raised objections to it, and then other guys looked at him and says, what the fuck are you a pussy? Are you not with us? Do you not know what's happened? Do you not know that, you know, Smitty and Mac both got whacked, you know, since we've been here because of these, you know? And they laid out, and so you're going to stand up to all that. And it's hard. And the same thing with the police department. They have those kind of issues where we're all we have out there. Right.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's another thing we should abolish the police department. And these people from Minneapolis are just amazing what they're saying. What do they want? Anarchy in our country? What do they want? They want to break down our.
Yeah,
our
but system. You know what? I think we all know that's bullshit. I mean, that's.
I know, but I'm just saying, you know, it's just scary that people would entertain that, Mac, you know.
Right. No, you're right, though. I mean, it is something that's, you know, you had the mayor of Los Angeles saying that he was going to, you know, reduce the budget of the police force and give it to community organizations. But let me tell you this, Smitty. They will learn the lessons the hard way, right?
Baltimore learned the lesson, right?
No, you saw. I mean, everybody saw most recently what happened when after the Freddie Gray thing. You know, we don't want you to lean into situations where you see something wrong, right? We don't want you to stick your nose into it if there's no crime going on, right? And the police department said okay, and the murder rate went up. And where did it go up most, right? In the poor parts of town, and who's living there? Minorities. And so their murder rate went up. They paid the butcher bill for it. And so
Matt, you know what's another thing I got to say, talking to my fellow officers that are still on the job is, nothing about these officers getting killed on the job, you don't hear nothing about it. You know, this retired captain from, Missouri, you don't hear anything St. Louis, about it. Yeah. Yeah, these guys were very frustrated by that too. You know, I mean, come on, these guys were people too. You know, these guys.
Well,
were,
no, I mean, we go back to the
protecting and serving. You know,
right? The after the Ferguson thing, how many cops in Dallas got killed? Five.
Yeah.
Right. So one, I don't know. You start doing the math, and again, that thing I read said a cop is 18 and a half times more likely to be killed by a black male than an unarmed black male is likely to be killed by an officer. The cop's more likely to die in that exchange than the unarmed black male. And it's not like cops don't know that, right?
No, absolutely not. They know that,
No.
It's just, I just wish the media would portray, the police officers in a positive light.
Well, just tell the truth.
Back, they're out there every day protecting, serving, and putting their life on the line, you don't hear that. And, they don't want to hear that. They just want to be respected. And if you hear the PBA president from NYPD, respect us. We're out there freaking protecting this country and protecting our cities,
No. All right. Smitty, first of all, thanks for coming on and talking about this stuff. There's a lot of guys I've spoken to that say, Mac, I'd like to, but I'd really rather not.
Hey, Mac, I appreciate the time. And again, I just remember having some good times with you guys back in, back in the 80s. And I'm glad I was able to reconnect with you through. And congratulations. It's fifth year with us now on Marine Corps, on Marine Radio.
Yeah.
That's great, man.
It has been amazing, but.
And also with the post-traumatic winning, I mean, that's probably the best thing that you're doing with your voice and your time. And
let me tell you,
need help out there, even cops, man. I mean,
no,
cops,
that cops need that message too. And so hopefully as this thing continues, we'll begin to get more and more in front of the law enforcement community. And that's where this whole, can you do it for more than, how many years? I don't know, 7, 8 years before it impacts you in such a way where, if you're a terminal patrolman and that's what you're going to be, we've got to put limits on that, because if we want to get that number to zero, because we can't allow you to stay in that poison environment and not expect you to either be a divorced alcoholic, right, suicidal person with the life expectancy that's less than 10 years less than your peers.
And I tell you also, Mac, just like you said,
too high of a price.
Having that stigma against you if you're asking for help. That's the same thing in fire, police, in public service. You get that stigma, this guy's asking for help and things like that.
He can't hang, right? Can't hang.
Yeah, can't hang, exactly. And you got to take that stigma away from it.
In the meantime, everybody goes home and gets drunk.
Exactly. Looking for the answer. Right?
Looking for the answer in the bottle. Or lies about it. Right.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then I hate to say it's been going on for years, and a lot of people talk about it, but they're not they could do a lot more for that, And that's why I really appreciate you helping the guys coming back from combat and stuff.
Well, let me tell you, it's the strongest voice in that whole discussion is the voice of people that have been there and have done it. And as you talked about how much they influenced you when you got on the police department about, if you see something wrong, you got to say something. We need to use that same voice, in a compassionate way, simply to say, hey, look, man, if you're struggling, there's nothing wrong with you, man. You can't do this job without at some point struggling, without at some point the things you see affecting you in your personal life. And look, this is just reality, right? 10-year less life expectancy, higher suicide rate, higher rate of alcoholism, and a much higher rate of divorce. Okay, you don't want to go down that path. So and so that voice of experience is such a powerful voice, and it not only should be that way professionally, but it should also be that way relative to mental health, which has such an impact on the quality of the life that you're going to lead. And we ought not to be afraid to lead in that realm. And I say to Marines, if you won't lead in that realm, you're not a fucking leader. You're just a person in charge. A leader gives a shit about the people that work for him and isn't afraid to go there. And so yeah.
One other guy I want to do a shout out to is Duffy White, another guy that we work with. That was a great guy too.
Duffy's in Nashville now.
Oh yeah, good man. He was always a good guy.
He's all right. Maybe less,
you know? But there were some great guys again, and I think I learned a lot from that year. You know, I was in tactics with you guys and working with the guys in IOC, and it was one of those things. One of those years I will never forget from all the great leaders, and like most of them became leaders of the Marine Corps, which is an unbelievable thing, you know.
All right, I hope you don't mind in the future when we talk about this stuff that that I call you up and bring you back on. So I appreciate that.
I just love talking to you. And if you anytime you want to come back to the beautiful East Coast of New Jersey, I know you love the East Coast, especially New Jersey and Boston and stuff. So you come down anytime.
I'm a New York City guy, and
yeah, no, you're a Yankee fan. I tell you what, hopefully hockey comes back. Hopefully Bruins were looking good, and I'm a Bruin fan, and hopefully they'll go far. You know.
All right. We'll leave it at that. All right, Smitty. Thank you.
Be safe, buddy.
There you have it. Smitty, talking talking about what it is to be a police officer, the issues that they deal with, and can you be a terminal lance corporal, patrolman for 19 years and not be dead inside? So, again, all this has to be is a, it has to lead to a greater conversation. And what can we do to change the narrative of the inner city for anybody who lives there? You know, what do we have to do? Clearly, the approach we've taken in the past has not worked. I mean, think about that. 7,400 murders of black people in this country. It's amazing. How do we get the same reaction in the country for that we get to the murder at the hands of the police? How do we replicate that? The same level of indignation, you know. How do we get that for unwanted pregnancies? How do we get a similar reaction to convince, you know, young men and women to behave more responsibly? And if, you know, and at the end of the day, it's the woman who pays the price. So to me, ultimately, how do you get to young women to say, look, you've got to take this seriously because you're going to take away options in your life? And for those of you that have abortions, there's a cost that will come with that. You'll live with that for the rest of your life. And maybe some of you will shrug and say, yeah, I don't really think about it. Others won't. Others will think about it. What would that son or daughter of mine have been like? And you'll have to live with that. And that's a serious conversation that needs to be had. So, anyway, if you're just tuning in, that was Smitty. In hour one, I talk about my home project update, and I also talk about Jack the Wonder Dog feeling better, which makes me happy. But I talk about the New York Times and New York Times did the nation a great disservice. And their publisher is a coward. All right. And so, talk about that. Yesterday, working in the yard, the thought got into my head, you know, what would Martin Luther King think if he were alive today? The tone of the discussion, the nature of the discussion. To judge somebody by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. What would he say about that? And the tyranny of the internet. And then I talk about, if Black Lives Matter, then what? And then ultimately the problem of leadership in the country. So all of that in the first hour. So we'll do the Lynch Kenny Cosentini event tomorrow, which ought to be interesting. So have a great day. This program continues momentarily on Wednesday. One final thought. We need more adults that bring the discussion back to a place where no matter the issue, we can be civil. We can have a discussion that's anchored to the truth. And the screaming and yelling stops. And then it's on the rest of us to commit to making real change so that the American dream, you know, works for more people. So on a Wednesday, All Marine Radio on that thought, out.